Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? Hi, hello, happy Monday. It's me, Sam, back with another podcast. Today on the show, we have Tracy Litt, who is one of these inspiring and happy people who is a success coach and she's very good at it. People go to her with the problems and come out with solutions. Not always a solution they were looking for, perhaps, but they've got one and that's what they're going to have to deal with. Yeah, she's a really cool lady. She's written a really good book that I've enjoyed reading before the podcast. And we talk about success, coaching, my terrible sex life, and just kind of fun things, really. I've been getting better at accessing the things that are going on in my brain that your brain normally hides from you. Or if you do think about it, it goes, oh God, don't think about that. And you sort of move on. I've been trying to find these thoughts and sort of then roll with them. So yeah, you'll maybe experience some of that in the podcast and it's fun. So I hope you have a nice time listening to this and get to learn something you didn't know. And on that note, enjoy. Nice.
And it's been incredible. We hit Amazon bestseller in the first day.
Wow.
And I've had the pleasure of meeting people like you and doing interviews and creating more impact and waking people up and inspiring them and doing all the work that I'm here to do in the world. So that's what I get to do every day.
Cool. That's awesome. I started recording just now, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I'm great. I love it.
So just to quickly unpack what you said before going into the book, which I'm really enjoying, by the way. I haven't finished it. And I also haven't got my notes with me because there's some bits that I actually wanted to talk about, but I forgot which ones they are. But that's life. readers will just have to find out about it. I would like to just find out, how did you go about marketing and getting to Amazon bestseller list then straight away on launch? Because that seems like a pretty difficult thing to do.
Yeah, so there was a few components. The first one being, I have the best audience and followers and community ever. And we've been hanging out together for almost 3 years now. So they have been anticipating the book. So what I was doing is I got a hard copy of the book a month before it launched. So what I was doing was I was reading, you know, like when you're younger and you sit on the carpet and you do story time and someone reads to you. So I did story time every week until the launch day. And I would open the book like randomly, I'd open it to a page and I would say, okay. And I would read the book and then I would talk about whatever the content was that I was reading. So I think a huge component, because the bestseller status came because the sales that day were exponential. But the sales were exponential because the community was so waiting for it and so ready. And I am so grateful to have cultivated thousands of people that love to hang out and access my work. So it was that in conjunction with the PR company that I was working with and the publisher's marketing team and getting it out onto Author Hour and all these other channels so that that day could be explosive. And that's what happened.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Like I did 3 Facebook Lives that day.
Yeah.
Because in the morning I was like, it's out, you can get it. Oh my God. Yay, yay, yay. And then the second live, I was just, the adrenaline and the excitement of the day was so incredible. Like it's the kind of thing you want to bottle up and energetically keep forever. And then the third live was when I got the call from the publisher and they're like, you just hit number one bestseller in, what was the, I can't remember the category right now. Maybe it was mindfulness and something, because there's several categories. So, and then I did a live on that. And you know, it's so cool. A beautiful woman wrote a blog about that video because my energy was like, so like, and she called me a blog. I was like a beautiful mess. I was crying. I was snot bubbling. I was standing in the reality of my dream. I was excited. So it's just been really incredible.
Cool. Wow, that's awesome to hear. I have my own number one news. I hit number one in the Solomon Islands for philosophy. Whoa.
That's awesome.
Number 10 in America, though, which is huge.
But it's amazing.
Number one somewhere is one. Listen, one.
Yeah, exactly. Don't discount that at all. It's amazing.
They still have every podcast available to them, so they still have to choose my one above others.
That's right.
Even though it happens to be a tiny country. Number two in Ghana. That's quite big.
Huge. Everything, yeah. any achievement, anything you do that is in alignment with why you're here and creates the impact and spreads the word is amazing. I love hanging in the space like this where you're doing it, right? It's like, yes.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, I mean, it's sort of, you know, the word like vanity metrics, not sanity metrics kind of thing, as in technically my sanity metrics are more like, how many great conversations do I have with people and how many people get in touch with me afterwards and say, oh, this really helped me kind of thing. And whether I am on an iTunes chart is irrelevant, but it's still kind of nice when you happen to be doing well. You're like, oh, look at that.
It's an energy exchange. You keep doing your work and you're putting yourself out there and you deserve it.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. Anyway, so I think we should backtrack a little bit and it would be good to actually introduce you a bit more and, explain a bit more why you're on the podcast, your experience. And I really like hearing people's life story in like a 3-minute summary, just as I find it's a really good way to kind of unpack the things that are interesting to like build the rest of the podcast on. So essentially, can you just introduce your name, what you do, and then your life story?
Yes, I'm Tracy Litt. I am a mindset coach. I'm a rapid transformational therapist, and I'm the author of the best-selling book, Worthy Human. I also am a speaker, and my life story in short is I personally am very familiar with triumph and tragedy and experience. Though I was brought up in a beautiful, beautiful upbringing, my middle-class family, amazing parents, great siblings. As I got a little bit older, my mother passed away when she was very young and I was very young, and that was extremely it brings up emotion to this day, and it's been 18 years. That's something that changes you, right? And then I became a single mother with my daughter when she was 8 months old and had a lot of powerful life decisions to make. And through the course of things that were happening for me, I always knew that I had the ability to choose, right? Versus allowing those external circumstances to make me feel victim or why me. I always had this kind of flame inside myself that knew it's now about how you respond. It's now about what are you going to do with what just came your way? So that is who I am as a person. And one of the things that inspires me to teach and coach people, because you can either be a victim or a warrior, no matter what external circumstance is coming your way. And you can live your life based on what happens outside of you and be a total powerless entity to what that is, or you can realize that you are the root cause of it all and you can really choose how you respond. And then, kind of speed us up, I was in corporate America, like many entrepreneur stories go, and I spent 12 years as a vice president of human resources for healthcare firms, and it was lovely and fine, and I was good at it, and I did well. But ultimately, my soul was dying. I know I'm meant for bigger. I know I was placed on this earth to impact more people in a deeper way. And then I finally fell in love with my fear and decided to go back to school and went back to school, manifested a layoff from my corporate job and launched the Lit Factor and have had the opportunity to serve thousands of people in many, many different countries. And now here I am.
Cool. On the Growth Mindset podcast. How about to this? Exciting.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the quick and dirty.
Yeah. That's kind of quick. I feel like your childhood got like brushed over a little bit there, but I think I've read about it in your book, if I remember rightly.
Yes. Well, what's interesting about that, you know, it's so anytime I have the opportunity to be interviewed or have a conversation, the question of, you know, tell me about yourself is always a very interesting one because it's so broad and I can stay really granular in any area. But just to address that, and I do talk about it in the book, there was no trauma of my childhood other than what I created for myself, right? Other than a constant comparison to my older sister, creating a belief system of I'm not enough, I'm not smart enough. And that's the interesting part of it too. It's that we all live somewhere on the spectrum of not enough. which is the inspiration for Worthy Human, because the truth of the matter is that anything that's ever happened to you that has influenced your ability to fully own your inherent worth is a lie. It's not true. It doesn't influence it that way. But when we're kids, we don't know that. And we build our belief systems. And then we end up as adults with a 7-year-old controlling our lives, basically, thinking that we're not enough. So that's that part of my upbringing that you were referencing. So for someone like me who used to believe I'm not smart enough to now have a best-selling book is hello, anything is possible when you change your programming and you believe what you need to believe to be the person you want to be.
Yeah, definitely. As in, similarly, I had like a verbal dyslexia growing up, and to have a number one podcast where I was like, how? That involves speaking? No, never have happened. Back to you. This is the conversation about you. Yeah, it was quite interesting reading your book. I was literally, I just had an interview with a guy who he runs like OpenVPN, and he was talking about his childhood, about the same age as you, where his home and all his neighbors, his home was bombed, his neighbors were all killed in Iraq, and he had to like escape. But he didn't have as many like psychological issues as you were like having in the book of like feeling bad about yourself and your situation. It's quite interesting the way your external environment like influences how you feel. And it was just really interesting the way that the brain works, and sort of seeing how you'd end up getting depressed and annoyed about your life and feeling that you can't do things when someone with like a massively worse situation is still like, oh yeah, I can try and like get to a different country and sort of do good things. And it's just weird the way humans tell these stories to themselves. And
absolutely,
you kind of broke out of this. And
you don't realize how you internalize things also until you dig in and do the work. Like, I would love to speak to that gentleman. Has he peeled back the layers? Is there something there that he's not even aware of? Because so much of limiting stuff flies underneath our ability to recognize it, unless you're intentionally looking for it, right? Unless you're ready to become aware of what's stopping you from doing that thing you've been wishing, hoping, wanting, and praying for. It's not just going to come flying up and going, hey, knock, knock, guess what? This is what I really believe about that, or this is what I really think about you. So it's interesting because we all have these like really human wounds, right? By virtue of all of the experiences we've had. And it doesn't have to be judged as deep trauma or more surface. It's simply, how did the things that happened as you were growing up, how did those things impact you? And what did you learn from them? And what rules did you create in your life as a result? And what do you believe about yourself now? And who do you think you really are as a person? And then being able to analyze and change all of that, because that's how powerful we are. Like, malleable, we are totally plastic. We can become whoever we want to become, which I find, like, I remember when I first learned that, when I was deeply, like, intensely obsessed with neural pathways and how do people really change? Not just, don't tell me 21 days to change a habit. That's bullshit. Like, give me the real information. And when I started learning about it and realized how powerful we are and how many things we can change, I had one of those moments where I wanted to run around my neighborhood with a megaphone, like telling the world, like, you don't have to be this way. It's not just the way you are. You can do this. You know, so I was so excited. So excited.
It can be a bit overwhelming though, when you kind of realize it, as in you get like the growth mindset and you're like, yeah, I can become like a master at anything. You're like, oh wait, I kind of decide on things. Otherwise it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I can become awesome at this and at this and at this. And it's like, okay, just be awesome at like two things. And then once you're awesome at those things, then you can become awesome at the next thing and thing. And
I think it kind of goes past just mastering, right? It goes past mastering things. It's more about really the goal is be good at being you. Everything else will fall into place if you are willing to go, hey, this is my truth. This is what I believe, right? And not shrink down because you're concerned about what other people think or who's going to accept you or not.
So on that note, what is your truth? What is you exactly?
What is me? What a great question. What is me? Well, I am pure love, joy, and levity. If I had to describe myself, I am like pure love, joy, and levity. I don't take anything too seriously. I love to have a good time and I love to enjoy life. That's what we're here for, ultimately. I'm here to impact people. I am a vessel of healing and growth and inspiration. And I also just do what feels good to me. And I think that's probably the biggest part of who I am. Like, I released giving a shit what people think a long time ago, because you can't do you if you are concerned about external validation. And it allows me to show up, like, in my truth. Some days I'm crying online. Some days I'm, you know, just full expression, like full vulnerability of my humanness, which is an intention I have for everyone.
Okay. I totally agree that not caring what people think is hugely important in terms of like actually becoming yourself. But then it's a conundrum in terms of like, you literally went in and said, and then I'm showing online talking to people where, okay, you must care what people think, because if you're bothering to tell the world about this thing that you're having this idea, if you didn't care what people think, why would you be online sharing it? And like, so it's just an interesting like conundrum to unpack there.
Well, I think it's all, what's interesting is the language that we're using, because it all depends on how you define things, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sharing online because I care what people think. I'm sharing online because I can show you how to feel better. I have solutions to your problems, right? I'm sharing online because I want you to awaken and learn and grow and be educated. Whether or not you're into it, whether you are bothered by the fact that, let's say, I'll use this as an example, I curse or whatever, if that's not for you, great, right? So it's not necessarily, you don't show up because you care what people think. You show up because you're there to serve and you have something to say. And there's always someone out there in the world dying, waiting, needing for you to show up and share what you know and teach. I firmly believe that.
That's cool. Thanks. That explains it for me, if anyone ever tries to ask me awkward questions. Because yeah, I don't care what people think, but I do really like sharing great information with people and having interesting conversations and helping people. And
absolutely.
So it is confusing, as in like, I don't care and do care at the same time. You think about
it. You know, it's interesting. It's like the difference becomes, are you attached or are you not attached? And non-attachment is the goal, right? Non-attachment meaning I have something I want to share. I know I'm excited about it. If I'm excited about it, someone else is going to be excited about it, meaning I'm going to be able to serve someone, right? And then you show up with that intention of, I'm going to share and I'm completely unattached what happens after I share or what happens while I share. It's more simply about you're being true to yourself in showing up and having deep conversations and sharing things and talking about growth mindset. And that becomes a gift and a ripple effect to those who are ready to receive it.
Yeah. That links really into like the whole philosophy of happiness, and like having expectations is basically the worst thing in life. And if you don't have expectations, then you can be ultimately happy. But again, the conundrum of, if you don't have any expectations, then why would you bother doing anything? But if you have this picture of you, oh, I'm going to write this book and it's going to be amazing and people will love it. If you have that expectation in your head, that's going to motivate you to go and do it. So again, is it bad or good to have expectations if they're motivating, but if they also make you unhappy? And
so it's interesting too. This is like another small scenario where it depends on the word we're choosing and the definition of that word, right? So in the book, I actually talk about the life suckers. And expectations, I note as one of them, because expectations are the root of all heartache. That was a William Shakespeare quote, not a Tracy Lipp quote. And it's really true, because what we do when we set an expectation is we are living in control, which is also really detrimental to your soul and your flow and your happiness, because you're saying, I need for something to go a certain way. I need for someone to be a certain way. And then what happens, because 95% of the time, your expectation will be violated or not met, you're now driving yourself into frustration and disappointment, all because of something you were creating. So instead of looking at what you're saying as an expectation, I would look at it as an intention. My intention is to show up powerfully. My intention is to write a kick-ass book that wakes people up to owning their power. Okay. My intention is that it reaches all the people that need it. Not it has to be this number of people in this amount of time, because that's attachment. That's expectation. That's being connected to the outcome. And then you're completely missing the process. You're missing the now. You're missing the excitement of like, oh my God, now I wrote it. Now I'm talking about it. Now we're out there. What happens after the fact is really none of our business. And that's where expectations get screwy.
Okay. That's a sort of step back to the before we went off on the tangent of the conundrums that have been bothering me. So you explained what Tracy Litt is and who you are, but you didn't explain who you were before you became this vessel of joy and giving enlightenment to the world. So how did you, like, what did you have to change in your mindset? And you said, like, when you first realized this, it was like, shit, I can do all these things. So what was the you before that was...
I've always been a happy person. I've always been a gatherer of people. I've always been the girl that all my friends come to, right, for how to do life right and really kind of... I've always been the person. Yeah, I've always been the person that's willing to tell you what you don't want to hear, but you know you need to hear. But the parts of the work that really changed for me was the belief in myself. I had lots of self-doubt. I had lots of, can I, who's going to, why would I do this? What if this doesn't happen? That kind of real that I know we're all very familiar with, because it's very natural to have self-doubt and insecurity about, am I enough? And what am I actually, like my gut, my soul's telling me I'm really capable, but my mind is totally screwing me over, right? And it's keeping me, it's literally like my mind was like, oh, hell no, I don't care what your gut says. This is a no. And it was giving me all that self-doubt to kind of keep me in a safe, locked position. So eradicating my self-doubt and really starting to take the new actions that I needed to believe in myself was a huge part of my growth. Releasing judgment was massive for me. I'll never forget. I came home from one of my school, you know, I was back in coaching school for adult learners. So it would be like live weekends and work throughout each week. So it's like this huge program. And I came back one weekend and I started a judgment journal because I was like, I don't really judge. Like, I am love and light, you know, and I'm like happy. So there's no way I judge. I was supposed to keep this judgment journal for a week. I kept it for 2 days and was so nauseous over how much judgment I found. I was like, whoa. And that's when I started doing that work, and that shifted me tremendously. So that's another huge component of the change is I practice non-judgment, right? And it doesn't mean that every once in a while I don't recognize it, but my awareness is so high that I recognize it instantly and I can shift myself out of it. Releasing control and expectations. I will tell you the story because everyone who listens to this will love how controlling I used to be. When my now husband was my boyfriend and I was having a party and I was hand addressing the envelopes to the party. And he sat down and he was like, oh, can I help? And he goes to grab an envelope and start to write addresses. And I pulled the envelope back from him and I said, actually, here's a piece of paper. Can you just like write an example of what you would write? And he looked at me and he said, are you seriously asking me for a writing sample right now? And I was like, yeah, I am. Okay, if that's not control, I do not know what is. Like, really, it was an envelope. But at that point in my life, control was how I felt like safe and protected and like, you know, in control. So releasing control has been huge. Letting go of expectations. Oh my God, huge shift for me. So I'd say those belief, self-doubt eradication, letting go of judgment, control, and expectations have shifted me energetically in a way that is hard to articulate.
Cool. Totally relate to kind of all of those things, really. Especially when you spoke about when you first, we're generally like quite a happy person. And then I can't stop myself from coaching people kind of thing. If my friend ever has a problem, I'm instantly trying to like solve it. Or if they say, like, oh, I've got this idea to do this. I'm like, yeah, let's make this happen. This is awesome. And they're like, whoa, why are you taking this seriously? It's just like me talking. I'm like, because it's awesome, let's do it. And yeah. So I was always like that. But then I did have like the self-doubt and all the things that you kind of spoke about and was controlling and judgmental and things. But I think I'm much better at this stuff now. And yeah, definitely much happier for it. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, and I think that what you just said is the most beautiful part in the intention of it all. You're much happier for it, right? I said it changed my energy so significantly. That's the thing. that I need everyone to realize, it really comes down to how you feel. And when you start to make changes and then you have the new evidence and feedback of feeling so much happier or feeling your energy so much higher or whatever that results in for you, when you start to feel better, that's when you know you're really changing and you're making new choices and you're developing new habits. And it's happiness and joy that we're all really after. And the things that you and I are very beautifully owning, like, oh yeah, that was totally me, releasing that stuff is non-negotiable if you're going to ultimately get to your highest levels of joy.
Cool. Yes. So at what point did this transformation occur in your life story? Was this like before you started the Lit Factor, or was it during?
No, you know, it was before I started the Lit Factor. I think right when I lost my mom, like something started to happen, because how can it not? When you lose someone so significant and such a beacon in my life, she was my best friend, it instantly put me into a place of becoming more introspective, right? Doing a little bit more like, wait a second, life is really valuable. And what am I doing here? And how do I feel? So it kind of like planted a seed, if you will, because it was such a huge tragedy. She was 51 years old. I was in my early 20s. I had a little sister who was only 15 years old. I had an older sister. I mean, this was like a massive, this is the kind of thing that you just never want to have happen. So that started it, because the best way to honor a loss is to show up more because you're still here, right? That to me, a lot of people I get to work with, students, clients, everyone has grief. And that's the best way to work it and process it, right? So it started there, that transformation, because I wasn't willing to give it away or let it pass by or live it half-assed or not access my capacity, because look at what just happened. Life is so precious and so fleeting. We're talking about a healthy woman with no issues, and she dies of liver and colon cancer. Towards the end of her life, she became a spiritual healer, started identifying some of her internal stuff that she started to believe made manifest in her illness, right? So I was like, whoa. Interestingly, and this is so beautiful, I have a lot of her old spiritual work. This was 1999-ish. And I look at some of the stuff I write and talk about, and then I'll just go sit and like look through some of her stuff. And it's like identical, like the words that we use. And it's, it fills me up, like totally fills me up. So that started the transformation. And then those other things I mentioned, you know, becoming a single mother, and that's not something you sign up for. You don't start a relationship for it to end with an infant, and having those kind of gut-wrenching moments and the sacrifice I had to make and the commitments I had to make and the choices I had to make to create a life for she and I. Also, everything started happening for me to go, whoa, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. What can I learn from that? How did I create this? What is this teaching me? And it was like a slow but certain snowball that kind of happened to where I was finally like, okay. And then I started getting interested and started reading and started growing. And that's when my soul was finally like, psst, you don't want to just stay in corporate America the rest of your life. Like, you've got something to do here. And then I listened to it. I waited 2 years because the self-doubt was like, no, you can't. Who do you think you are? Don't do that. No, you're safe. And then I was finally at that moment where I just realized that I wasn't willing to go down like that. Like, I'm going for it because this is our one go. And that's kind of this slow yet certain transformation that took place over time.
Wow. Cool.
I am delighted to announce today's sponsor of the episode, Skillshare. Make 2020 a year where you explore new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in creativity with Skillshare's online classes. And what you find might just surprise and inspire you. Skillshare is an online learning community where millions come together to take the next step in their creative journey, with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people like me and you. They have topics such as illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. I've really been enjoying their masterclass on productivity for creating a system that works for you. It's a good one to start your year with. And I've also been enjoying their Instagram poetry class for being more of a poet and artist on Instagram and creating fun quotes and things. And you can follow my Instagram, Sam Jam Snaps, or the Growth Mindset podcast to see how that's working out for me. Being creative, I think, is really important. And I just love the way Skillshare works, the community and the features and feedback from your actual coach. It's a really nice place to be. And so I'm delighted to have them as a sponsor of the Growth Mindset podcast. So you can get 2 free months of membership where you can take unlimited classes by signing up now at skillshare.com/growth mindset. And yeah, it's 2 whole months of premium unlimited access to all of their classes for free. So yeah, get started and join today by heading to skillshare.com/growth mindset.
It's really interesting to hear the way you sort of describe it as like a kind of unraveling or sort of a snowball effect. Because I certainly feel like the same way in terms of I've been getting more into the growth mindset and things and started the podcast. And then that sort of really increased the rate of becoming aware of the things I could do and like reading more. And then taking like a Vipassana 10-day retreat where it was like, it's like a huge sudden shift where like you just get so much more self-aware to everything you're doing. And you kind of just recognize more and more opportunities as you're going along. And like you first spoke about how we're blind to so many things and it's so hard to be aware of like your own judgments because you make them like naturally. Like if someone walks in, it's like your brain is built to literally judge what that person's like for you so that you don't have to like spend forever trying to work out, oh, what's this person mean to me? I don't know. And like it's like an innate behavior, but trying to work out what these things are that's going on in your brain just gets more and more like you just get better and better at it as your awareness builds, which is really fascinating. So that's cool. And then I really resonated with what you said about as in when someone dies, it's not something to be sad about as such as your like sort of purpose is to actually kind of show up in life and just sort of live your best life. But then I kind of really feel that way. But then I've never been able to cry when someone dies. I don't know why. I just, I get sad about many things. I'm sad about the fact that I'll never see them again, but like they're dead. And I'm like, well, they wouldn't want me to be spending time being unhappy. So I just won't be unhappy. And it's quite like, I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me, but it's sort of weird talking to you who says the same things, but then like you were talking and then like I was typing and then I suddenly realized you were crying. I was like, holy crap, how is she crying already? And like, so how do you like have these sort of emotions so strongly and yet you're also kind of thinking analytically and sensibly about it and not being depressed, but like still manifesting like some of the badness about it?
Oh, wow. This is like an epic question. So getting really comfortable feeling all of your feelings is a paramount component to living your best life, accessing your potential, showing up in the world powerfully, whatever platitude feels right for you, right? But ultimately, humans are created to emote. And one of the biggest blocks that I see in many of the people I get to serve is an aversion to emotional expression, right? Is a block around being able to let it flow freely, getting to the point where we're not in judgment of the emotion, right? That crying wasn't good or bad. It was simply, oh, my eyes are watering right now because I'm discussing a matter that hits my heart. And as I'm talking, I'm not going to refocus myself into the crying because I'm not judging the crying. I'm just allowing it because I'm human. And that's what humans do. So getting to that level where you are so willing to feel whatever feeling comes your way could be one of like the top 2-3 keys to your highest level of success and fulfillment, right? Which then would bring me to asking you, do you feel like you struggle with emotion? Do you cry about other things? What was your environment when you grew up in regards to emotion?
Yeah, I was always quite chilled out when I was younger. Like never really felt that concerned about things. I was pretty content by myself. And like I said, I didn't speak much. I had like verbal dyslexia and things. So I actually was reading a lot more, but like not really speaking. So I didn't have so many friends, but I wasn't really that bothered about it because I was good at entertaining myself when I was young. Yeah, I've never really been a big crier, about things. And so I'm not sure if that's difficulty sharing emotion or if I just don't get super sad about stuff as such.
Well, you know, what's interesting is crying an emotion doesn't always have to relate it to being super sad, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I cried for joy as well a bit, but I guess I don't do that as much as other people sometimes. I don't know.
Well, yeah, well, it's what's interesting too is don't even compare yourself. It's not like, oh, they do more, I do less.
Yeah.
It's interesting, I think, you know.
I get lost on too many things and I'll start feeling a bit sad, but then I'm like, I'm not all that sad. But then I'm like thinking also about, why is everyone else so sad? And like my brain's doing like five other things and it doesn't need to be doing, rather than just focusing on like being in the moment of sadness or not.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? And this is just coming up, so I'll share it. Yeah. I would want for you to dig into, those are distractions. Because there's some potential that sadness isn't safe for you, or crying isn't the way that you were brought up, or I don't know if you saw your parents cry or not, but that, like, well, my mind takes me away and basically sucks me out of the place where I could start to cry for a second or feel that, is interesting, right? It's a moment for you to go, that's really interesting how it pings me away from whatever that emotion was.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That's interesting. Yeah, on the subject of, I'm thinking about it, so I'll say it.
Yeah.
How about during sex? Do you think that's another, because I would definitely say this is another thing sometimes where I like, I'm having sex, but then I'll think of a bunch of other things that aren't really related. And I'm like, why am I thinking about this thing? And I'll be like, well, how is this helping anything at all right now, Sam? I don't know, but now you're thinking about it. Isn't it weird that you're thinking about it? Yes, it is weird, so stop thinking about it. And it's like,
well, you know, it's interesting. Two things come up. Well, three things, actually. We're going to be in non-judgment of this because that's the only way to really self-discover, right? And two, I would also say that it's very normal. It's happened to me too. I'm sure it's happened to my husband, many other people. Like, your mind's job is to think thoughts, right? Keep you alive and think thoughts. You're having 60,000 thoughts a day. Just because you're having sex doesn't mean you're going to be like, for the whole, let's say, you know, 20-minute interlude, you're like only thinking sex. You know what I mean? Like, it's totally normal and natural. Then the other thing it brings me to is, how possible is it that there is a connection for you in not feeling the connection deeply? Is there any connection going on with blocking or pinging you away from your emotional self, interrupting a moment that could be highly, highly connective, because emotion is vulnerable and real deep connection is vulnerable, and vulnerability, we were raised to actually think that it was something to fear and something that was weak. So I'm curious if those things are connected for you.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought it up, I guess, as in perhaps I am a bit like disconnected on getting super intimate. And I have always been very level-headed, and I never got really angry at anyone or really pissed off ever. I just it's annoying that you've done that, rather than I've never like lost my shit and jumped out of a chair. I'm like, fuck.
And
I've just always been a bit like, okay, well, I guess I'll think about this logically. And but like overtake me. So when it comes
would
to
you say you're more head driven than heart driven, not meaning you're not loving, you're a lovely person.
Yeah,
meaning,
yeah, so I'm certainly loving and things, but I am more head driven. So I feel like I'm a robot. I definitely, like, I'm in some ways, I'm trying to cultivate this more in terms of vipassana. When you have things like anger come up, you don't want to let it overtake you. So sure, you know, I get out my seat and try and beat people up, but I still might get angry about it. Whereas now I'm more like trying to recognize that there's anger here and be like, oh, well, actually, maybe I don't need to be angry about this. Perhaps I can be nice to this person, like resolve the situation in an even better way. Whereas before, I just sort of wouldn't lose my crap, at least.
You know, what's interesting about that also is, do you allow yourself, and I agree, what you're doing in that moment is you're pausing and you're choosing a response versus allowing a reaction, and you're going into a conscious decision. And those are amazing things. And have you ever allowed yourself to release the anger? Not against another person, not toward, in your own space, in your own safe environment, to let it up and out for the sake of the release and the acknowledgement of your emotion.
Yeah, I'm really not sure if I have. I can't think of an example. I mean, I've never really like punch the wall or like throw my laptop out a window or something. Like, I don't know what.
No, what I would advise, I don't want you to destroy property. I would advise, and what a lot of my students get tremendous exponential release from, is screaming. Mm. Screaming on purpose, sitting down on the floor, Indian style, really with your tailbone, your sits bone, your root right on the floor, and bringing up whatever it is that you could be holding on to or made you feel angry, and screaming kind of like you're being chased in a horror movie, loud, strong, unencumbered, doesn't matter who hears you, until you have no sound left to give.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah.
It's kind of incredible.
That's something I've definitely never done. I've always been I'm not scared about many things, but then my voice is something that has, I guess, been important. I've got much better at speaking and things, but I don't know, I just never really feel like comfortable screaming or like singing and making like a big show of myself, I guess. So perhaps that's something I should
do. Well, that's interesting.
At. Yeah.
That's interesting. Your language was just interesting, not making a big show of yourself, right? I would imagine that at some point in your subconscious, playing it small because of the dyslexia that you had was something that was really real for you, right? Because, so it's like, okay, we can get rid of that now, and you can play huge, and you can show up boldly, and you can use your voice, and you can let your emotions out, and you can connect to yourself because it's safe, and you can.
Cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I really remember, like, when I was younger, I happened to do like speeches in front of the class and sort of being so scared and horrible about it that I actually kind of pretended that I'd like lost half my speech so I wouldn't have to read, even though I had like the rest of the cards there. I was like, oh shit, I've lost it just so I could sit down, because I was like, it was going so awfully. And then like whenever, you know, like a bunch of friends and like people were talking and said, oh, Sam, what do you think about this? I'd be like, can't speak. Oh God.
Right. Well, that's huge. Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge that part of you. Acknowledge your little boy. Like, that must have been really hard, right? That must have been really hard. And it's important, too, to go to that little boy and give him some love and go, hey, buddy, I get why you did that. And it absolutely has an impact now in you not showing up fully or using your voice. And the not using your voice is directly connected with releasing the emotion or allowing the tears. Or all. It's like you can see how it's like, oh, okay, it all goes together.
Cool. I feel ready to have a big scream after the podcast's done.
Oh, yeah. It's good. It's good.
Nice. Oh, yeah. It's cool. It's like, it's definitely making sense how it's all interlinked and things. Mm-hmm. And it's why I've been really enjoying, like I said, I really like asking people like their life story and kind of unpacking that rather than just being like, oh, what do you do? Let's talk about that exactly. It's like, so nice to see where people have come from and how things have changed and why it's happening. It's really fascinating.
It is. It's like watching someone's evolution, right? And watching progress.
It's really good. So yeah, we didn't go into so much of like, so what did you study at university, or did you go to university?
No, I totally dropped out of college. Which is interesting. So I'm not enough. I'm not smart enough stuff I used to have. You start to see how that infuses the choices you make. And one of the stories I used to tell myself when it was time to go to college was, I don't really need college. I'm going to do something I don't need college for. And at that point, side note, now I do believe that college is not for everyone. We're living in a much different world. There's so many opportunities. There's entrepreneurial, there's vocational. So this is not a conversation about college. But as it pertains to my story, I so deeply didn't believe in my capacity and my own smart enoughness that I basically sabotaged my college experience. So I took a couple of classes at community college. I moved away to Charleston, South Carolina for a couple of years, went to College of Charleston for half a semester, and then ultimately didn't go and never had the desire to go back, you know, and ended up in the restaurant business. It was like a whole different world. But I never finished university. And I would have loved to have the social experience of doing it, but I truly don't feel like I missed out on anything intellectually, because what happened for me was once I eradicated that limiting stuff and I realized I'm so smart, Sam, I'm so smart. It's like outrageous how smart I am. And of course I'm totally enough. And once I found something I was interested in, human potential, growth, healing, trauma, how to think, neuroscience, I'm obsessive. I'm like the geekiest, nerdiest college kid diving in. I'm constantly ingesting, learning, reading, listening, writing something about this world that I get to play in. And it's incredible. So what I did was go back to school to get my certified professional coaching license. So that was a year program with IPEC, amazing coaching school. It feels like it's like a bachelor's degree for coaching. Like they really do a great job. And then I also got my master practitioner of energy leadership, like this fun energy assessment. And then I was so into it that I went back to school again and I became a rapid transformational therapist. I'm now an advanced RTT therapist, which is hypnotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and neuro-linguistic programming all in one method. It's unreal. Wow. So I did that. And I'm constantly just in courses and learning for my betterment and for my ability to better help serve all the people I get to serve.
Awesome. I definitely would agree that like possibly the best part of university was like the social aspect and kind of everyone else doing it and kind of being a part of the thing, and the actual education you receive is really, really good, but you don't necessarily need it to do well in life. You can definitely do well doing other things. So
absolutely. And I think it matters what your intention is. If you know you want to be a doctor, if you know you want to be a lawyer, if you know you want to be an accountant, if you know you want to make films, if you know you need to learn things about it, yay.
Yeah. If you already know what you're super interested in, like you said, then it's like, shit. You're just sort of acquisition of knowledge is great. But then you can do that later if you're interested in something, you can still get super into it. As in, I'm doing like a how to learn course at the moment, which is really fascinating and I think you'd really enjoy it. And definitely all the kind of things we're talking about. And
awesome.
Yeah. So you spoke about quite a few things that I kind of wanted to unpack. But so firstly, the energy coach thing, as or was that energy assessment.
Mm-hmm. An energy assessment.
What did you need that for? You clearly have lots of energy. I mean,
it's more.
Like, did someone doubt your energy or what's going on?
No, it was actually something I got to do with my coaching school that I can give to students or clients. So we're very familiar with personality assessments, right? Like predictive index, strength finders, Myers-Briggs. And as a VP of HR, I'm very familiar with those too. I don't like those. I think they further label and limit a person. And they just kind of tell you, okay, you're an INTJ, you're this, you're that. And then you end up living within the construct of that story. The energy assessment is similar in that you're, you know, taking an assessment, like you're answering questions. But what it's ultimately delivering me back is how much of your energy is catabolic and how much is anabolic. And catabolic energy is your low level kind of destructive energy. And anabolic energy is growth-oriented, productive, win-win, higher energy on the energetic scale. So that's essentially what it was. It was another tool for me to help a client with self-discovery and understanding where they are energetically. And then through the course of shifting certain behaviors, then you rise energetically.
Okay, cool. So if you were going to use that on me, how would you assess my energy levels exactly?
Oh, well, it's not energy like I'm really energized or I'm really low. It's vibrational. It's frequency. It's emotionally based. So you would get the assessment online and you would answer a bunch of questions and then it would deliver me back and then I would analyze it. And then I would basically give you a debrief that kind of feels like a intuitive reading, pulling up burdens, forgiveness, resentments, judgments, rationalizations, you know, powerlessness, various things. And that's when you kind of have a jumping off point to go, okay, this is what I want to work on.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That would have been fun. Hindsight, should have done that beforehand. Then I still wanted to really ask about the rapid transformation therapist side of things, because that sounds like really fascinating. So how do you rapidly transform someone?
Oh, like, yeah. So, I love talking about this. So first, rapid transformational therapy is a method that was created by Marissa Peer. She is noted as UK's top therapist She has been in this field for a really, really long time, and she actually personally developed this method of hypnosis, NLP, cognitive behavioral therapy, and psychotherapy elements rolled all in to one epic method. Because in her understandings, as she was, you know, moving through her own experience as a therapist, that why should therapy take forever? Why does it have to be every Friday for 5 years talking about what's going on? Everyone wants and deserves rapid shifts and relief. So what this is like me speaking is, or what can I do and how do I put this together in a way that helps us find the root cause of the symptom that this person's arriving with, right? So whether someone comes to me for social anxiety or depression or lack of self-confidence or migraines or fear of something, the symptom is not the problem. The symptom is happening because of something that's lying underneath, something that's actually in your subconscious mind that's creating the symptom. So when we drop you into hypnosis and move through the method itself, which is about a 2-hour session itself to do it, we start to uncover what's the cause of this, right? What is the originating memory? What's the thing that happened? What's the trauma? What's the disempowering belief? What happened to you that you developed social anxiety as a mechanism to protect yourself, right? Making that assumption, this is making up an example. And then once we're down there, because now you're in your subconscious, we can see it differently. We can heal it. We can pull it out. We can reprogram it. And at the end of the session, you get a personalized recording that you hear me make at the end of the session while your eyes are closed and you're chilled out and you're in trance. And the recording is all the stuff we're inputting. The recording is, let's just keep with social anxiety as an example. I love being around people. I love using my voice. You love speaking your mind. You get so excited every time you get invited to go somewhere because you love showing up and spending time with your friends. It feels so easy and you're so calm. And every day you go out, you feel calmer and calmer. And I'm using suggestibility to embed the new programming. And then you get the recording and you listen to it. This is the part that's your responsibility. Every day for 25 days. My clients have exponential results when they listen twice a day. It's about 15 minutes max. And now all of a sudden, we are actually changing you from your subconscious. And that's what makes it so rapid. It's incredible. I have worked with people from social anxiety, depression, fear of vulnerability, fear of emotion. A woman who had migraines for 23 years, never had a migraine again. I mean, it's amazing because everything that we're experiencing symptomatically has a role and a function. And we weren't born with these things. We created these things as a result of what has happened throughout our lives. And once you find what lies beneath the quote problem, now you're really at a point where you're changing. If you keep just trying to solve for the symptom or the problem, you're not doing anything. That's the fun part of it. And I've done so many and I've had so many successes that I'm now an advanced RTT therapist. And it's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing to help people. It's amazing to help. Like when you find the root cause, that one instance, right? It's like, it never gets old. Every aha, every breakthrough, every change, I cry. Oh my God. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It seems like you're definitely doing something that brings you great joy. And yeah, it's a really cool philosophy and it sounds pretty awesome. And certainly the whole like repetition of getting things and drilling it into your brain is pretty massive. And been doing like I spoke to one guy who sort of, he writes his goals like twice a day, like his big life goals. And it just sort of really reminds him why he's doing things. And you're like, shit, yeah, why don't I do that? Because then I'd sort of just be a bit more aware of constantly why I'm doing things and not sort of be waiting for other stuff I don't need to be doing or whatever. But then like wherever your biggest problems are, if you're listening to it sort of twice a day and sort of being like, oh yeah, you don't need to do that. And it's just, it's instantly there when it starts happening to remind you not to do it or to show up differently, however that is.
So yeah. Well, it's like how you reprogram yourself. And when you also start to understand how to work with your mind, right? Your mind has laws. Your mind has certain rules and regulations. Like, hey, you collaborate with me the right way, I'll give you what you want. But you have to be aware of your language and not asking for what you don't want instead. And you know, really honoring the fact that you're a human and a spiritual being. So there's energy at play and you're creating constantly. So you can either learn how to create on purpose or you can keep sitting back going, why am I not getting what I want? When in actual fact, whatever system you're operating under is the ideal system for what you currently have. And if you want to change what you're experiencing, what you have, what you're creating, we have to take a look at what your approach is, meaning beliefs, thoughts, focus and attention, language you're using, where you're placing your energy, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, oh, that's really cool. And I could do, like on Vipassana, I found some of the techniques were a bit like brainwashing, but then it's brainwashing you to be a better, nicer, happier person that's more aware of themselves. And you're like, well, yeah, I guess we'll just like embrace that. And then they sort of kind of in the same way of what you're doing, it's sort of brainwashing in some ways, but like it's brainwashing to help you and make you be the awesome person you want to be. So it's kind of like a really
totally. And you know, what's interesting about that is the part of your mind that wants to convince you it's brainwashing is your skepticism, is the part of your mind that doesn't want to change, is the part of your mind that's really like good staying where it is because your system is not interested in change. Mm. Your mind, every time you try to change, you're probably going to die.
Well,
and it tries to stop you.
I was kind of quite keen for the change in that sense, as in brainwashing was just like a way I described it, but I kind of liked it.
Oh, got it. Okay.
But what you do say, it is an important point, as in I do think that is kind of how a lot of people think about things, and like, you still do it yourself about other stuff. Like we spoke about our prejudgments of anything where it is about to change your opinion. You kind of feel like, oh, something's about to change what I think, and I'm kind of holding on to what I already think because it must be the best thing, and your brain is being silly.
Yeah, of course. I mean, our beliefs, like we believe our beliefs. Beliefs run deep. When someone tries to, what feels like, compromise your beliefs, right? That's like a violation of your identity from a mind standpoint. That's not what it really is, but that's what your mind is thinking. It's like, how dare you? Yeah. Like, that's not what I believe. That's one of the things that makes learning how to use this thing like a tool so important, right? I talk about it in the book, like you have to run your mind. You cannot let your mind run you. It does not know what you want. It is your worst enemy from a standpoint of living your best life and thriving and creating and doing something bigger and badassier than you did yesterday. Your mind's not interested in that. Your mind wants you to stay at home on the couch, doing what you've done, being who you've always been, feeling how you've always been feeling. So it needs not be in charge.
Yeah. Well, as in your monkey mind that is like you sort of just in the present reacting to things, and then like your meta mind of consciousness that sort of decides how it wants you to show up in like the bigger picture is more the one that you want to be in control. So you know, it's going to be your mind at some point that's doing something. So when it's...
Yes, here's the variable. Here's the variable. I'm going to unconfuse it.
Yeah. There is no spoon.
You are not your mind. Like you are not your mind, right? And if your mind isn't being directed by you, if you're not thinking on purpose, if you're not the being that's making the choices of that meta, that vision, right? Then your mind itself, left to its own accord, is nothing but a repeat of your past, old habits, old patterns, old emotional addictions, redoing it over and over and over again. Also combined with the fact that your mind's singular job is to make sure you stay alive, right? Which is why fear is such a thing. So as soon as you start to do something that's different than what you're doing right now, whether it's go from being someone who worries to being someone who's carefree and ease, whether it's being someone who used to have a job to being an entrepreneur, whether it's not using your voice to having a crucial conversation, anything different than what you are right now triggers your fear response because your mind needs you to survive and your mind goes, holy shit, she's going to unknown territory. Danger, danger, it must not be safe. She's going to die. Get her to think a whole bunch of things that get her to stop. Right? That's what I mean by your mind. Your mind, unless you are mastering it, running it, and doing this work, needs not be trusted, and you cannot listen to your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, your thoughts do crazy things. And I could really like in the meditation, if you do the meditation with the other Sam Harris, where he tries to get you to look back into yourself, as in if you sort of try and just like sit with your eyes open and try and see where you're visual field is coming from and look in on yourself, and you just can't do it ever because there is nothing there that's doing the looking. And it's really like weird loop, and you're like, oh yeah, so my brain's kind of anywhere, and it could just be in my foot or anything. I just feel like I'm kind of about here in my mental space, because that's behind my eyes, which is where I'm seeing things. But then actually my mental space could be anywhere. It's kind of a weird phenomenon of stuff. Cool. Okay, nice. Then is there anything in life that is currently troubling you or scaring you?
Scaring me, yes, because fear and I hang out all day, every day. What I really mean by that is, in explaining a little bit about fear before, you know, I'm growing, I'm expanding. I have a very, very strong intention to impact 1 million people, to really awaken and honor their worth and run their mind, right? To really, really do the work that you and I are starting to speak of. And I don't have reference points in my mind for having served millions yet, right? So that's scary, because on a daily basis, when I'm pushing my edges out and I'm doing big things, and I have a 3-day immersion event coming in January that I'm doing, and the book came out, and beautiful interviews and huge scale speaking things, and these beautiful masses of humans that I get to touch, it's scary. But I love it, because every time I engage with that fear, and I love it because it's always right here, I realize that I am doing what I'm meant to be doing, right? If you're not feeling fear, then you're not growing. You're not expanding. You're not pushing your edges out. So I've learned, and I teach, how to love your fear. Like, okay, I'm about to do something. It's scary. Oh, look, there's my fear, like a loyal dog standing there waiting. And instead, you own it. You love it. Hey, buddy, I love you. I know you're here because you think I'm in danger. I'm not. We're just going to go do something really big. And then you take action for yourself, and you start to learn how to use your fear to propel you instead of like block and paralyze you. So yeah, there's fear all the time right now, because I am in a major up level time in my own life, for sure.
Cool. Yeah, I really like what you said, and kind of relates to that. I've really been trying to detect things that give me fear, and I almost pursue them more these days, as in, like we said, about sort of realizing what emotions you're feeling. And before, as in, it was more automatic, like, oh, something's a bit scary, I'll try and like definitely get away from that. Whereas now, as in, I feel the thing that scares me, and I'm sort of almost drawn to it. Like, as in, most people don't admit to having weird thoughts about sex on a podcast, but it was like, I think I need to talk about this, because this is probably the thing that's like the scariest thing for me to talk about right now. But actually, it was quite useful for me, and it was really interesting, I think, good for listeners. And like, it was just something that like was just much more interesting than talking about the same thing or like something else. And
yeah, well, what's supposedly safe? And I love what you just said, because vulnerability is where everyone needs to go. Everyone needs to go there. And it's scary, especially if you haven't started mastering it. And if you haven't done inner work before, vulnerability will trigger your fear response and shut you down, right? That's why you've got to do this work, because when you do the work, you're like, you can do anything. Your fear is like a GPS for where you need to be going, right? And actually, I know when you get to that, the last choice in the book, my book, Worthy Human, is all about fear. Because it's that important. It needed its own section, because it's the underpinning of every single block for every single human being, period.
Definitely.
And we need to learn how to really dance with it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I really like that sort of philosophy about it. It's a good way of describing it. Nice. And then on the subject of fear things, because you spoke about doing Facebook Lives, and something I still, I guess, is in rooting back to like my kind of fear of talking about myself lots, is in a little bit like, I don't know, scared of doing things live as such on the podcast. And that's something that I'm definitely going to sort out. But I was just wondering, like, how did you get into doing that as a pursuing my fear and I'm going to start sorting out kind of thing?
Yeah. So let me make sure I'm understanding the question. How do you do things live?
Yeah. Yeah. Just how did you go about doing that? And did you have any fears you needed to overcome, or like,
No, you know,
just like, oh, okay, there's a Facebook Live feature, you just hit it and like it just started straight away.
Yeah, kind of ish. I remember my first Facebook Live ever. I was sitting on my back patio. I had my sunglasses on, and that was a protection mechanism for me on my first live. And I remember working my work. Like, there is nothing I teach, talk about, or coach that I haven't done on myself or on another student that I know works, right? Like, I don't give tools to give tools. Like, this, my work works 100% of the time if you work it, period. The only reason it wouldn't is because you're not doing the work. So when I decided, okay, I'm going to do a live because, like, I have things to talk about and I love talking, much rather talk than write, which is hilarious because I wrote a 57,000 page book, but I'd love to talk. So my first live, I have my sunglasses on. And before I hit the live button, which is all I did, I just paused and I connected to the truth. Not the shit my mind was trying to offer me, which is, are you sure? What if nobody shows up? What if someone makes a comment? La, 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 all the crap. I just paused for a second. I took a deep breath and I said, wait, like, you're here to serve. You have something really helpful to share. Your work is not about you. It's about everyone else. Press the live and have some fun. That is an example of what thinking on purpose actually feels like. Thinking on purpose means think the thoughts you need to think, to feel the feelings you need to feel, to do the thing you want to do. And that's what I did. And it was super fun. And anytime you do something and you create new reference points for yourself, it then becomes easier and easier every time you do it. So now I hit live, like, when I'm half ready, I'm like, just, well, whatever. I haven't decided what I'm talking about. I just know I have to talk. And I just hit live. I'm like, okay. And we just start talking. So eventually it gets easier and easier and dissipates.
Cool. Yeah, I really like that self-speak. I'm so glad I asked that question. Because
yeah, it's going to be super helpful. You'll love it. Mm. Yeah.
Thanks so much. Okay. And then is there anything you really wanted to discuss that I haven't asked you about?
No, I thoroughly enjoyed this. It was free-flowing and lovely. And thank you for showing up in a way where we could do some work for you, right? And just, like, have some really good dialogue. That was beautiful. And I know super helpful, because beautiful humans are going to watch this. This is what it looks like. You showed up vulnerably. We both did. We just shared. We connected. We didn't know each other before now, but now I, like, know you and you, like, know me. And
yeah.
This is one of the beautiful parts of a connection and technology, right? And all the things we can do. You're on the other side of the world and we're having, like, profound growth conversation that if you let it, I'm giving this message right now to our listeners. If you dig into this conversation and you let it help you, it will help you exponentially, because there are dozens of nuggets in this dialogue.
Yeah, I've definitely enjoyed making lots of notes. It's been super handy for me. And yeah, I think it'd be really useful for everyone else. And hopefully you learned something, maybe. I don't
know. Yeah, no, it was great.
One thing I actually just relate to is, in, I think we're both really good at coaching other people. And then something I have found, unless I'm doing something specific that I'm reaching out for a coach for about, I sometimes do feel that I don't get so much sort of coaching and help. As in, do you feel like, because you're always so strong in helping others, that people think that you never need any help?
I'm not sure what people think, but I can tell you all what the truth is. I always have a coach. Always. It's like, I will sooner stop doing pedicures and manicures before I give up a coach. Because having a coach is what enables you to continue to expand and find your blind spots and really go there and be called on your shit and be pushed to the next level. I wholeheartedly believe in the coaching industry. It is progressive. It is healing. It is expansive. And yeah, I always have a coach. So I've had two coaches, like, simultaneously before for different intentions. But yeah, coaching is everything. So whether or not you want to invest on a coach privately, or you want to find, like, an epic group experience where you can have that guidance and the community, do it. I think we weren't raised to invest in ourselves this way. This is a new paradigm. This is a new way to do things. And it's huge. It's huge. It's something that I really, really hope the masses start to understand, that it's not about investing in a new handbag or a new, like, sporting event or whatever. Those things are lovely. But what we're here to do as human and spiritual beings is heal, grow, and expand. And you cannot do that alone. Listen, my book is amazing. It will help you. There are work sections. You can use it like a journal. But even beyond this,
yes,
you have to get help.
Someone else, and, like, talk to each other about it at, like, a minimum.
Yeah, make a book club, or, you know, I do live programs, invest in yourself. Do, you know what I'm saying? There's the personal growth world is huge, right? If I don't resonate with you, you know, find someone who does, because there's so many magnificent people that wake up every day to serve.
Cool. Thanks for that. And then, Miss, how did you go about finding your coaches? Do you try and get different coaches every few months? Like, what's the process there?
It really depends on what I need, but I'm the strongest believer in a mindset coach. So I also believe when you need something and you put it out in the universe, it's going to come to you. And that's how I found the coach that I work with now. It was like, she just ended up on my Facebook somehow. And I started following her and hanging out and sent her an email. I was like, yeah, I dig you. Like, I know you're what I need right now. So let's do this. And then it depended on the other coach that I was working with. You know, I kind of wanted I wanted to work on my spirituality a little bit. So that was more intended, right? Like in a certain direction or outcome. Or, you know, a couple of years ago, I had a straight like business strategy. You know what I'm saying? It just depends on what it is you need. And do you want to learn? Like, do you want to be taught something? Like you're saying you're in a course right now. Do you want to just be direct taught? Are you looking to be coached? And whatever it is, it's available because everything is available to you.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I was glad I asked about that.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Mindset coaching, if I was ever like as a mindset coach as well, mindset is everything. So if you are going to choose a coach, find a mindset coach who knows what they're doing because you will change. That's really the truth.
Yeah. So that's why I started the podcast, is in terms of wanting to serve and help people, is the podcast all about mindsets and
which
we'll take and you have to teach people to think better and influence their mindsets. So
That's right. Cool.
Then last few things that I always like to ask people are, what is the kindest thing that someone has ever done for you?
The kindest thing someone's ever done for me. This is a really tough question. I'm going to go with two answers because I really cannot. I don't want to decide. I'm not going to say I cannot. That's not true.
Fine. Okay.
The first thing is the amount of support I get from the community and the audience and the followers that hang out with me. I really feel like that's kind. I mean, the love, the support, the unwaveringness, the loyalty, the excitement. I receive that as kindness. So I would say that. And my husband's willingness to believe in my dream and do all the things that we had to do familially. We have three teenage daughters and he and I, and we made some very significant choices, like moving when I wanted to start the business, and, you know, me leaving a high paying job as a VP to venture out into this unknown world. And he instantly, right? Like instantly, it was like, yep, let's do it. Whatever we need to do, whatever you want to do, like wholeheartedly know you're going to go wherever you want to go with this and let's do it. And made it completely about how do we ebb and flow so that we can build an infrastructure that's supportive of me starting a new business. And that was extraordinarily
cool. People showing up for you.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Yeah, it's really nice to ask some people. And it's like I said, in terms of programming, it's really helped me become a lot more kind, just sort of defining what kindness even is and being constantly reminded about different ways that you can be kind. And it's just instantly when like something comes up as like an opportunity to be kind that I don't recognize and maybe wouldn't have done the kindest thing now. I'm sort of like, this is a way that I can be kind. Shit, I have to go and be kind now. And it's really helpful for me. So I'm happy about this. And then also, is when we spoke about like early memories and the way they influence us, the other question I really like asking people is, what is your earliest vivid memory, or like one of the most vivid early memories? Something from basically that comes to mind.
The memory that I actually remember, because I have a lot of memories by virtue of the fact that my older sister tells me things, my dad tells me things, which don't count in my book because that's just them telling me a story. But an actual memory, like I can remember it like it was yesterday, was when I found out that I lost my grandfather, was my mother's father, when I was 7. And I will never forget being told. And I ran out the front door of my house and I like got to get on my bike, but then I threw my bike down because I was so, he was like my best friend. Like, I feel like my grandfather told me secrets that I just can't remember. So that is a vivid, vivid memory that I can go back to at any time that I actually recall on my own.
Wow. That's sort of sad and deep. Why were you throwing? So we
I was like anger. Like, what do you mean he's gone? Like, I remember feeling so injustice, you know, especially at that age. Like, you have no conception of death and understand seven. Like, I don't even know that I had a pet die before that.
Wow.
And it was just one of those really intense things.
Yeah. So you felt like the world owed you to have like your grandfather being around and doing fun things with you. That's amazing.
Right. It's like, yeah, just like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean he's gone? Like, what's the concept of gone?
Yeah.
You know, I think anyone's first interaction with death is like, what do you mean someone's here and now they're gone and they're never coming back? What does that even mean? Mm. How do you even understand that before you actually understand it?
Yeah, yeah. It's really like deep lesson to be learning as a child.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing. And anything else now that you want to ask me or?
No, I thoroughly enjoyed this and I want everyone to grab this book.
Yes.
It's going to help you. Okay. I know it's going to help you. It's already been changing so many lives and I want it to change as many as possible.
Cool. Yeah. I can agree. It's really, really well written. I'm loving all the examples and I've read a lot of the literature in the genre because I'm super into it. And actually I'm still learning things from your book and really happy that I got to interview you and I got sent the book for free to read up on. Because it's a top book. I've got a lot of notes that I'm going and making on it.
Great. I can't wait for you to get to choice 8, the fear chapter. Message me after you read that part. I think you'll really love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Will do. Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. And thanks so much for making the time and doing the work that you're doing. And I hope the book carries on staying in the bestseller list for some more time that deserves to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're super happy that you're doing a job that you're so excited about. And it's really inspiring to see how much fun you have doing the things that you do. And I can tell you do because of it, like just asking someone about my own things and you're like, oh, this is so exciting. So definitely very genuine, present, excitable person. So
thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad we get to know each other now. So keep me posted with how you're doing. And
likewise.
Awesome.
So that was Tracy. What a cool lady. Some good take homes as well. I think her point about showing up and being a vessel for making cool things happen when she explained how she started doing Facebook Live was really nice. Like, I think getting over your nerves and just sort of reminding yourself about what and who you are and why you're doing something is often very hard, but very important if you can do it. And then other things like the brilliance of just being able to connect with people anywhere in the world was quite nice and relates back to the episode a few weeks ago with Jan Tarlin, who started Skype. So if you're interested in that, go back and have a listen. Her book is certainly worth checking out. It's called Worthy Human and will motivate you to be a better you. And that's about it, really. I hope you come back next week and enjoy the rest of your week of listening to podcasts and doing whatever it is you do in your life.
You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at SamHarrisTweets or Instagram at SamJamSnaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.